Welcome to Star Party, an astrology and tarot podcast that serves up both soulful evolution and bedazzled celebration. I'm astrologer and hypnotist Sandy Citron.
And I'm astrologer and tarot reader Bess Matassa. We're so glad you're here. Let's get the party started.
Hey, Bess.
Oh, hey there, Sandy. Welcome to the welcome to your past lives. We're gonna dive into the ghost cupboard today.
We're diving underwater, right into our memories.
Through time. Through time and space. Wow. The past, a big theme encompassing everything from memory to past lives to ancestral lines to what you ate for dinner yesterday.
Yeah.
What's been going on with you in relationship to time and this theme lately, Sandy?
Well, I think we came upon this theme because it is so broad and so important, and also something that we don't spend a lot of time on. We're in a very forward-moving world, and now that both of us and most of the world are in some kind of lockdown, I think it's given us a chance to stop and say, oh, how'd I get here? Yeah. Wait a minute. If I can't move to the future, then where did I come from? And what's the past? And I'm not even going to think about the present, but so of course there were a lot of places to go with this one. Like, as you said, another thing to add to your pile of things that have to do with the past that I was thinking about is the idea of regret, which is something that I think about a lot. And also the idea of like successes and failures and this kind of weighing out that we tend to do of our past.
Yeah.
And like the childhood and the childhood memories. So I think where I kind of wanted to land with my part of this conversation was talking a little bit about what I think about regret and how that has to do with, you know, success, wins and losses.
Ooh, amazing. It's funny when you say regret, because I think we all have these kind of emotional chromosomes or arrangements of sort of emotional DNA. And regret is an emotion or a theme that I feel totally disconnected from.
That like, was going to be my guess.
No, it's funny.
I have an astrological reason for why that might be.
Oh, yeah. For you. Oh, yeah. I have some speculation about that, too. But yeah, it's funny because certain, you know, emotional kind of landscapes we're deeply familiar with and others we might be a little bit estranged from. But connected to that, I think for me, the past, you know, obviously in this historical moment of continued lockdown in New York City, at least at the time of recording, for me, the past has started to really just come through in these wild waves, you know, through dream, through, it's almost like as the lights go down each day, somebody rolls like a slide projector out of my entire life. And it's just like these kind of hits coming through in this very nonlinear way of big, big memory. And it's not something that I usually experience that much. I mean, I do have moments, obviously, of being kind of overwhelmed by the time I've spent on Earth, you know, from a memory perspective. But I think, and, you know, we'll get into it astrologically more, but as someone who's so hardwired density experience is fire, I think that the past can be kind of a frightening place because it's both the knowledge that there is an end to this incarnation, which, you know, we all obviously have feelings around death, but I would argue that fire is one of the elements that struggles with this the most, you know, in terms of like the personal significance of my incarnation is going to end and where is everything going to go. And also this kind of feeling of where to put the past, I think, especially with like intense fire energy, you know, as I kind of live through, it's like everything, every big feeling feels like it needs to find a purpose. And so the past for me historically has been this realm of like, okay, you just move the past into an action, or you move the past into part of this heroic narrative of the story of Bess on Earth or whatever it is. And so I've been interested lately as these big waves of emotion kind of come through with parts of my own past, you know, what happens when we don't have a place to put it? And also this kind of doubled here-ness and not-here-ness of the past, this sensation that a big memory can fill our bodies and feel incredibly vivid and here, and it's also not here at all. So that kind of vividness and that ephemerality in the same breath, and how to be with that. And just on a literal level, I don't know, I've been also like experiencing these like weird kind of unexpected hits of my own family line. I don't know how I got to this place the other day, but I randomly happened upon like a ship log. I didn't realize they have all the Ellis Island like ship logs actually like digitized. And I saw like my grandfather's actual like signature and log from his arrival in New York. And I don't know what happened to me, but I like literally just wept all day long. And it was just like this big release and connection to just all of the lives and loves and losses and learnings and livings and all the L's that had to happen for me to be here. And how, if I'm really, you know, honest about it, my incarnation in this body is about halfway over. And I feel like I'm gonna like burst into tears on this recording actually, but you know, just, yeah, a lot of big feelings coming through for this fiery queen.
It's interesting that in astrology, the past is connected to emotion, mm-hmm. you know, to the, if you think about it from the standpoint of the fourth house and the fourth house cusp and being like our emotional base, our emotional security is really also the point of access to the past and to our ancestors. So it's just this, it is a dive into the waters. Like when we go into the past, what we're going into is our emotions and our emotional stories. And I'm excited to hear about your first snack.
Oh yeah, my little cosmic snack pack. So I want to give a little bit of context for this. The snack is Pluto. Just to do the big reveal, but to backpedal a little bit. The first place that I really started feeling into this through the astrological chart was actually through the elements. And this is a wildly imperfect and very generalized kind of way of describing this, but I started to kind of feel into the elements and their orientation toward past, present, future. And I developed this way of thinking where water feels to me to be very connected to the past, to kind of past patterning and to memory and to sort of the realms of emotional inheritance. And air feels to me very futuristic in many ways. It feels projective. It feels idealized. It feels like moving toward the gap between the here and the might be. And then I was feeling into earth and fire as kind of mashups of those two realms plus another, and looking at fire as both present and future, and then earth as both present and past. So this idea of earth being really immediate in its ability to kind of use the resources at hand, but also about the kind of inheritance of a certain structural component to that, and how we might have used things in the past in order to kind of stabilize and secure. And then fire, present, you know, kind of overwhelmed in the moment by a spontaneous hit of inspiration or imagination, and then also projective into the future. And I know it's totally imperfect, but it's sort of what came through to me in terms of those three realms. And so the pull for me really in dealing with the past was very watery, and it was actually quite scorpionic. I was surprised because when I first sat down to sort of channel and connect, I expected maybe more Cancerian waters. I don't know what I expected, even looking maybe at the Cancer Capricorn axis and sort of ancestral inheritance, the fourth house, the 10th house, things like this. But the overwhelming feeling came through as Scorpio. And I started to feel into kind of what that meant or what that was. And I kept hearing Bruce Springsteen's Atlantic City playing in my head, that song. And there's a line in the song where he says, everything dies, baby, that's a fact, but maybe everything that dies someday comes back. And there's something so scorpionic to me. I mean, there's a lot of other energies in there too, but this idea of Scorpio as both maybe arguably the most mortal of signs in its experience of the life-death cycle and the kind of intensity of full-throttle living that inevitably evanesces. And then also this idea of vitality and of the eternal that kind of runs through Scorpio, this death energy of, yes, you know, life, death, exfoliations, composting, all of that. And also the rise, the repurposing, the thing that is eternal, the nugget that doesn't evanesce. And so I was really feeling into this notion of how we hold things connected to the past and how we sort of form ourselves around it and either, you know, grip it or learn to kind of release it, letting it ebb and flow. And that connected to Scorpio energy. And also this idea of integrating this kind of primal range of experience, this here-ness and not-here-ness of the past. What do we do with a big feeling when it kind of comes through? And it's not, it's real, but it's not real in the sense that it's here. And so I got to Pluto and, you know, I have a complicated relationship with Pluto and rich relationship as all the planets. But I think in some ways, historically, I've kind of just like felt into this planet as just like intensity, you know, this kind of zone of intensity in the chart wherever we have our Pluto placement, because obviously Pluto as through the signs is generational, so it moves quite slowly. So maybe we're not looking as much specifically at the sign it's in our birth chart as the house placement. But this idea that I've thought of it just kind of as intensity, and it's like that word, you know, what does it actually really mean and what's embedded in there? And so it's been coming to me lately more, yes, as intensity, but also as this kind of higher octave of Mars energy. So in, you know, Mars and Pluto are connected. They're connected through Aries and Scorpio and, you know, the dual rulership of Scorpio being Mars and Pluto. But there's a sense in Mars energy, one octave of expression of, you know, something that we see in Pluto too, of moving, of I'm going to move the thing. I'm going to take my hand of my own egoic expression and I'm going to put this over here, or I'm going to push this forward. It's this kind of engine of creation. And Pluto in many ways to me feels like the higher octave of, if Mars is I'm going to move it, Pluto is how can I let myself get moved? And so there's this feeling, I think, connected to memory in the past and specifically sort of, you know, what we might consider to be generational or ancestral sort of inheritance of how we let ourselves get moved in these moments by memory and how we can kind of give up some of the control over our own story to let the sloughing and the exfoliating kind of happen of its own accord. So I've started to kind of feel Pluto energy almost as like, you know, I don't even know, some movement of Earth where things are like tumbling down the side of the hill, or, you know, some sort of earthquake energy or energy where something's released that's inevitable, that's a movement that's much larger than us, that's inevitable, that we have to just sort of surrender into and kind of let ourselves get almost buffed, you know, by. So looking at our Pluto placement as our call to let ourselves get moved by something bigger than ourselves. And also this kind of key into what we carry with us, you know, this sense that Pluto is one of these placements, you know, at least by house placement, maybe where we've come in packing this, you know, and it's not fully ours to carry. And so there's some sort of learning around that sensation. And it feels to me closely related to these waves of memory, because sometimes, you know, at least for me, even when I'm having a very personal experience of memory, there feels like there's always this extra charge. There's always this feeling of like bigger than, you know, even if it's a very personalized memory, to me, it'll often come through as like, it's loaded with also sort of extra cosmic content that probably precedes this incarnation for me. And, you know, similarly, when we have kind of an emotional experience in the present, you know, we've all had this experience of, you know, being in a situation that doesn't feel like it should trigger such a big emotional response. And yet we're like swept into this, like, suddenly we're weeping or we're screaming or we're so frustrated or we have this intense experience. And to me, those moments are always a key to both our own kind of personal past and lineage, and also to things, you know, again, that kind of precede our incarnation. And I think Pluto can be a helper and a healer and a kind of liberator of some of that matter that we carry, these big, big feelings that come through us. And so that's where I landed for the first snack of the day. And it's quite a meaty one.
It's very meaty. It's so funny to think of Pluto as a snack. It is like so far from being a snack, you know?
It's like
it's a whole, like, barbecue. I'm a turkey.
Yeah.
Would you feel like sharing just personally how you think your Pluto kind of correlates to this idea that you presented?
I sure would. Yeah. So I have Pluto in my birth chart in the 12th house, the zone that's governed by Pisces traditionally. In my chart, it is in opposition, you know, in kind of polarity with all of my planets in Aries. And so there's kind of this opposition between martial energy, between Aries energy of like personal significance, effort, pushing, all of that kind of conceptual matter, and these larger movements that kind of come up. And I think for me in my own life, my Pluto in the 12th really ran wild without any consciousness or very little consciousness on my part throughout the first part of my life, you know, in especially in my teens and 20s, as I started to just literally go wild, you know, in the world. And it would come through to me just in moments where I felt like I suddenly got like amped up to this level of intensity that almost felt like it was just like I almost felt like I was possessed sometimes, like in my teens and 20s, where I would just, you know, and it took some like kind of like low-key violent expressions too, where suddenly I would just be in a whipped up emotional state and actioning from that place and aggressing from that place. And I didn't even know how I got there. It was like, you know, it was like a blackout. It was like I would have like an emotional blackout. And then suddenly I was like, oh my God, I just like broke into my ex-lover's house. Like literally. And so I think for me, like Pluto and Mars ran very closely together during those times where I wasn't able to kind of, I wasn't ready to kind of give up or surrender a little bit of that very personally driven Mars externalized expressive energy. And I think as I've gotten older, the energy has started to swirl within a little more, and there's a little bit more of a Piscean vibration to it, where I acknowledge that my intensity and that kind of charge that lives in me is much larger than my personal life, you know, and it's definitely connected to a family lineage of, I don't want to say misplaced because I don't want to pathologize it, but, you know, intensity, use of intensity that maybe wasn't always like honed and channeled in a way that was most helpful for everyone involved and for the soul's growth. And I think for me, as I've gotten older, looking at that, looking at the way to kind of harness that energy through the release of the personal around it, it's like letting myself kind of like those intense waves that come through, that kind of Pisces Scorpio mashup that happens in the 12th house with Pluto, like letting myself sort of be carried on that without having to like take it and like make something or do something or purpose it in that way, but also just the acknowledgement that I am a being who's come into this incarnation, like here to kind of rough ride or vividly ride, you know, in certain flavors. I think in my late 20s, early 30s, I really made peace with it a lot in relationship, where I figured out, you know, that I was a person who thrived on a certain level of intensity, which inherently implies instability in relationship, and that was okay. You know, that I wasn't necessarily in it for happily ever after. I was in it for Pluto, Scorpio, burn it down, transformative kinds of collisions. And that was just my flavor. And then as I've gotten older, you know, that's taken, you know, different shapes throughout my 30s. But I think I've also experienced it more. I remember years ago when I was in a period of sort of acute psychological crisis, my therapist at the time, who was also an astrologer, wondrously, and a Scorpio moon, I remember her saying to me, you know, you can continue to live this out, specifically referring to my Pluto in the 12th house and those oppositions. You can continue to live this out through partnership. Like, that's totally fine. Like, the ownership of that. And or this can be harnessed in a way to connect you even deeper to the drama and the vividness of art, you know, and of creation. And I think as I've gotten older, I've released a little bit of that need to ride hard in relating. And it's come through more in almost a Piscean way of like channeling mystical, artistic creation. And I think I feel that's sort of where it's kind of headed. Not that it's linear.
Ah, juicy stuff.
Oof.
Pluto. Oh man, it's interesting because I was really thinking throughout all this, I kept thinking about karma and paybacks, like that's such a big part of the past, or when we think about the past. And I'm going to wait to get into that, but I think that Pluto and or Scorpio energy, there's also with the Scorpio, you have the Scorpio's tail, and there's that the scorpion's tail. And there's that sense embedded in it of like, I'm going to get you back, yeah. Like for what you did to me, which the higher side of Scorpio, the evolution of it is about also forgiveness and letting go. But it's, I have more to say about Pluto. I'm going to put a pin in it and go to my first snack, which is talking about the fourth house. And the fourth house really encapsulates, like if I'm looking at a chart and the client wants to ask me about past or memory or things having to do with parents, not all things having to do with parents, ancestors, I'm going to look at the fourth house cusp first. And at the sign on the cusp, and also what planets may be in that house. And that's kind of how I'll start to get to an understanding of or an interpretation of how they're going to work with their past. If they have Pluto in the fourth house, that might be a very intense past that needs to be released and processed and released and processed. And power and control and these dynamics need to be looked at so that person can be most empowered and feel in control in their life. So the different symbols found in the fourth house are going to really shine a light on the processing of the past. I have Aries on my first house cusp. So my childhood there was a lot of violence. Like there was a lot of anger, was an emotion that was very present. people forcefully putting their own personality first without regard for other people. That was a big thing. So yeah, that's a place where I can look and say, okay, there's a lot here about you know, one way I could think about it is like selfishness and like me as a Libra wanting to balance that out by like, I'll help you do everything you want to do. Like you be the focus of attention and I'll be the support. Like, how could I make you feel better? And so that's been a big point of reprocessing from my childhood. So looking at the sign there, I think could give a lot of information. What sign do you have?
To be honest with you, my fourth house cusp, you know, and my IC and the whole grab bag down there has never really fully made sense to me. It's Aquarius, and I can see it in terms of sort of ancestral lines of tension between Aquarius and Leo, perhaps, like at the other end of that. I can see that there's a very strong leonine family line, and for me, but I've never really fully gotten in there.
Get in there a little?
Get in there.
Aquarius, I think of as being very erratic. So having a childhood with parents who are very erratic or who are wanting to just like, where there's just their emotion can just come in and just swirl everyone around.
That's super interesting to me because you're like down and dirty with the Aquarian energy. I feel sometimes I'm a little more remote in my dealings with Aquarius, not to like double down on the remoteness that I already sometimes feel from this sign, but especially being such a Leo hardwired person, Aquarius sometimes feels kind of like unknowable energy to me, but that is spot on to a D.
The
erratic emotional injection in my family of origin for sure.
Yeah. The other thing with Aquarius is like the parents who were detached, you know, and in a way that can sometimes take away your own individuality. Like your individuality doesn't matter because individuality doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think I used to get kind of tripped up on, because I think I experienced my household as so leonine and so focused on the specialness and the essence of like individuals that I think, it's almost like our healing in some ways was to cultivate a little bit more of that Aquarian, you know, energy of detachment. It was almost like the sign on the cusp of the fourth was not necessarily always the environmental descriptor, but the invitation for evolution as a family.
Here's another thought, which I can't totally root in Aquarius, but it feels right to me right now, so I'm just going to go with it. And this could also be, I have a lot of Aquarius. My grandmother is like a double Aquarius. My mom's an Aquarius moon. My mother-in-law's an Aquarius moon. There's like a lot. So there's something there about like even though it's supposed to be detached energy, sometimes I feel like it's so detached from your personal rights. Like it's like all the doors are always open.
Right.
There's like this, and like open in an uncomfortable way. Like, I don't want to see you on the toilet. You know, I don't know if that's totally Aquarius.
Well, that was 100% my house. So.
Okay. Yeah. How would that be Aquarius? It's kind of like, well, we're beyond that. We're above that.
Yeah,
we have a new idea about it. Who needs these private worlds or these individual worlds? It's about the collective.
It's like where we're going, there are no roads, and there's also no locks on your bedroom door, and no, you know, it's like,
exactly.
It's like wild spaciousness.
We all share a toothbrush.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I think we might know. I don't think that actually happened. But yeah, there was a lot of like both celebratory and deeply disturbing aspects of what you're bringing up in my house. Super interesting using the fourth house cusp to start to feel into evolutionary calls in reframing the story, looking at the actual story, what it is. And I think that our Pluto placement as well can be a gateway into the energy of sort of collective, maybe not as much conscious reframing as maybe the fourth house gives us. The fourth house gives us, I think, this gateway into a narrative connected also to Cancer energy, which feels very personalized story energy to me. And then maybe working even with Pluto as beyond the reframing as the kind of radical release of just letting the story kind of live and find its way through you and find its way out of you, you know, as these patterns are kind of tumbled down the mountain.
I loved your elemental breakdown. I think it's spot on and a great way for all of us to look at our charts and see what our elemental balance is, and looking at some of the major luminaries, the sun and the moon, and then looking at our Mercury and looking at the fourth house cusp to see like what is the mashup of elements there and how do we relate to the past? The other thing I wanted to say, which I'm kind of cheating and I'm smushing two snacks together, but the sun and the moon and the signs that they're in, I find to shine a light on our experience of regret. So the connection, the conversation that the sun and the moon are having with each other, because the sun is your core self and the moon is your emotional reactions. So it's not really your emotions. I don't read it as your emotions. We all have all the emotions for the most part. You know, we experience fear, we experience sadness.
I don't have regret, but
right. No, is that even an emotion? I don't know.
No, totally kidding.
No, but so like we have this menu of emotions. The moon sign shows how do we respond when those emotions come up? What do we do? And those emotional reactions are going to be somewhat subconscious or conscious, depending on how much personal work we've done. The emotional reactions are going to be fast. They're going to come quickly. And often they'll be there to either soothe us or to solve a problem or to respond to the guidance that the emotion is giving us. So the moon is acting in this kind of reactive way, the moon sign, while the sun is connected to that core sense of self. This is who I am. This is my factory settings. This is me. So if the sign that the moon is in is complementary to the sign that the sun is in, then the way that you react in those quick moments is going to be somewhat complementary to that core sense of self. Whereas if the sign that the moon is in opposition or square to the sign that the sun is in, then you may find yourself acting in an emotional moment in a way that later you would regret. Or that there's kind of like a delay or a sense of like, oh, why did I do that way? I didn't mean to. That wasn't how I wanted to act. Of course, that can all be balanced over time. And, you know, that's part of the beauty of the astrology charts. We are all always having these contradictions or these varying energies that are working together. But so I was going to guess best because your sun and your moon are trine, right? Your sun is in Aries and your moon is in Leo. At least they're trine by sign. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That my guess was going to be that the trine would make it so like, well, yeah, I'm acting when I'm emotional in a way that matches with my core sense of self.
Yeah.
My sun and my moon are in the same sign. So I'm just like, yeah, of course, my like immediate reactions are going to kind of match up. It's not always, you know, but that's my little concept around regret.
It's really interesting. Yeah, because it's funny, even thinking about that trine and like in my own experience, that sort of doubled down fire energy, it's, you know, historically often like things will come out and like big, big actions will be taken inspired by emotions that then I'm like, what the fuck? Like, you know, but it's not what the fuck. It's just funny because it's not the feeling of regret because there's a certain inevitability to it. There, it's not that I'm just like running roughshod over the world and like never, you know, I can be in states of contrition and apology and, you know, cognizance of my actions, but it doesn't feel like the feeling of regret. I'm curious to you, like, what does regret feel like or what, you know, like unpack that term a little bit.
I think I forgot to say it, but I also don't have the feeling of regret. Like, I like don't know what it is. I have felt sorry. I feel apologetic, you know, but regret is not on my menu per se, because I like the way you said inevitability. It's like, of course I was going to do it that way.
Yeah. You know, like, well, and it's also like, it's a certain degree of, not that regret is a problem. And if you feel regret and you're listening to this, you know, you've got to like, you know, aspire to be the lunatics that, you know, Sandy and Bess are, but there's something about the feeling of when we pan out from regret or when we get kind of around it or something that feels very like in some ways connected to the 12th house, to Chiron, to Pisces, to this energy of allowing, because there's something about just the humanness of saying and feeling, well, it couldn't have been another way, not because I'm like fated or I'm stuck into my emotional patterning or, you know, there's something linear or constrictive about this reality, but we did the best we could with the resources that we had on hand in that moment. Other people, even if it feels wildly discordant from what we wanted, were also trying to do that too. And that's it. You know, like they're like, you know, the idea that we could rewind and be other than what we are. I don't know. It does feel connected to me to a kind of Piscean healing or release or definitely a watery energy.
Yes, totally. Like dissolving the notion of right or wrong a little bit. Well, that was wrong. That was right. This is the good being. This is the bad being. Let's sort out. I think regret, if you have your sun and your moon are in signs that don't play so nicely in the sandbox, signs that are square to each other or opposing each other or in conjunct, then you're just going to find that those emotional reactions are maybe going to feel like they weren't necessarily as lined up with what you, your core self would have wanted. That's not a bad thing. It's another place to get comfortable with yourself and to figure out where you need to forgive yourself and to apologize to yourself. I think if you have your sun and your moon and signs that are sextile each other or trine each other or conjunct, you know, well, I'm born on a new moon, so I can speak to the conjunction and I find it to be regret free. Then maybe the work there is like also slowing down to say, okay, I'm just in action and moving forward. Do I also need to look at that patterning? Because, you know, have I found that my emotional reaction to things, even though I'm okay with it, is problematic? Sure.
Right.
I might not always get that guidance, that ping, that emotional guidance of, oh, regret this. Might not always get that, but are there, you know, negative consequences later? Sure.
Yeah, I think that's, you speak to a really important kind of concept. If you think about, you know, signs in trine or in conjunction. And, you know, I know we can talk about out of sign aspects and blah, 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 but I don't really deal in those too much. And I think to me, a conjunction is, you know, two planets in the same sign energy. I mean, we can talk about degrees and things like that, but, you know, roughly that's the experience of it. And then, you know, signs in trine are in the same element together. And, you know, exactly what you're talking about when you have trines and conjunctions, there's almost like a proximity, you know, because there's like such a closeness and an alignment that sometimes we don't have the breath. We don't actually have the space to like bear witness always to ourselves or to get that kind of perspective. And so, you know, looking, it's not like, oh, with trines and conjunctions, you get a regret-free life and fucking go enjoy yourself. And, you know, if you have squares, like you're going to be like calculating your every move and just like mired in the sea of regret. I think that for people with trines and conjunctions, it's a call to kind of aerate or let circulate or, you know, inject a certain degree of spaciousness between, you know, emotional reaction and response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So what's in your backpack? What else you got?
Well, I kind of mashed up my my two astro snacks, although I think we were doing one astro.
One tarot.
Yeah.
So
it's a soup in there. So from astrology, I was really looking at, you know, elements and then looking at the Pluto placement. And through the tarot, three cards came through and they're all connected to water energy. Two are explicitly connected to Scorpio energy. And for the cards, I think there's, you know, there's different ways we can work with these energies. Obviously, if you do tarot spreads and pulls for yourself, you can, you know, see these cards coming up in a spread or a pull as kind of calls to maybe explore themes connected to the past, connected to, you know, what we've been discussing today. But you can also choose to work with these cards consciously, you know, putting them up in a place of prominence, you know, in your space and, calling upon these cards as invoking them as energies, as archetypal energies, because the tarot certainly doesn't just exist for us to like pull and see what we quote unquote get, because what we get is already what we are. So we can pull ourselves consciously too, without having to be like surprise, flip it over. But the first card that came through is the Five of Cups. And this is a card that is astrologically connected to the planet Mars in the sign of Scorpio. Each card in the tarot has a specific astrological resonance. And so this card, often visually, we'll see it in decks, is depicted with a person who seems like shrouded in kind of like a grief mode of being. And I always forget the ratio, but there's three cups that are spilled over in front of them, or two cups spilled on. I think it's three. Yeah, it's three, because it's more has been spilled than is, you know, still waiting behind them. But there's usually three cups that are spilled over, and the person is sort of, you know, kind of bent over and mourning over the spilled cups. And then there's usually two cups that are like off camera a little bit, and that the person, the figure is not aware of necessarily. And, you know, in some sort of traditional interpretations of this card, it can be like the grief card, you know, and this kind of like experience of loss, or, and, you know, it can definitely come through in that way. But, and I also think, there's an element of it that speaks to the two cups that are behind this person, this sense of like trusting in the not yet here-ness of something. And I think it can be a card that can help us in these moments to kind of anchor us when big emotions from the past rise up, to kind of let ourselves almost kind of rock back into them and just sort of that kind of like letting feeling, and this sense of Mars and Scorpio as doing this work kind of on our subterranean places, and kind of excavating our emotional channels, and using this card's energy to almost like kind of like internally exfoliate. And at the same time, building our capacity to trust in those seemingly empty spaces where, you know, a lot of times we can associate the past with depression and the future with anxiety, you know, these two kind of heightened emotional states that a lot of people experience as uncomfortable. But there's something about that gap that I think this card can help us navigate, where the past comes through and it might be just like this feeling of total loss, or this feeling of inaccessibility to that realm that doesn't exist anymore. And yet we're not yet in the future of a new fullness of experience, the fullness of the new cup. And so kind of navigating that in between terrain. And I also think it's interesting, this card's connection to Mars and Scorpio, because it really feels to me like a card that's about trusting emotional instincts and letting yourself kind of navigate and wayfind through the emotions. And all of the fives in the tarot are certain kinds of constrictions. They sort of contract us in for a moment. They're frictional energies, but I think in these energies, you know, as much as they get kind of a bad rep sometimes for rep, it always confuses me, but they have a bad reputation for being, you know, quote unquote difficult. But I think these are really the numbers in the suits that help us to make this element our own through experience. You know, the fives are connected to the Hierophant and the Major Arcana, connected to our own experiential knowledge, our own kind of core curriculum through our life experiences. And so also using this card as an access point to the loss that can only be yours, you know, the loss that liberates the legacy of you. You're kind of wayfinding through that, and you're kind of wielding of that to a certain degree. And the second card, I think I'm actually going to leave off the third one. I'll name it, you know, as an energy, but, the second card is the Death card. And, you know, and on the surface, this feels a little bit on the nose for talking about, you know, the past, because this, you know, this sense of release, this sense of composting, this sense of what has been and will never be again. But there's also this really shape-shifty energy to this card, this repurposed energy, because everything, you know, that's past goes into something else. But there's this feeling that I've had with this card, and not to dive too deeply into a complicated personal story, but as you know, Sandy, you know, this past year I've been through kind of a wild body journey that's encompassed a lot of physical and emotional, quote unquote, loss, or relationship to losing or to shedding. And in the fall, when I was really in the acute phase of this body experience, the death card, I was like pulling it almost every day, like just pulling it blindly from the pack. And the question really that came through for me connected to this card was, what is eternal? And it's a question that I think lives at the heart of Scorpio through all of these exfoliations, through all of these snakeskin transformations. What is the heart that beats, you know, beyond all that? And so I think this can be actually an anchoring card, not just for the kind of traditional association we might have connected to release and composting and helping us snakeskin between the seasons of our lives, but also the sensation of what is that nugget, you know, what is that essence that really lives at the center of your incarnation that that is even going to outlast you. And it, you know, it's an esoteric concept to connect with, but I think this card and considering that question can start to help us to feel into and to penetrate a little bit. And the last of the cards was the Queen of Cups. I don't want to get too deeply into it, but I think that this this figure is one that can help us hold the swirl. You know, all of the queens are these almost these like little outfits hanging in the back of our closet that we may have forgotten are like fit us like second skin, but we have to kind of choose to re-embody them, choose to kind of zip ourselves back into this little bodysuit. And the Queen of Cups, the realm of water, allows us, I think, to contain this very complex emotional swirl without making anything a problem, without analyzing it, without externalizing it or making it into an action. It's a card that is in many ways unintelligible, I think, in like regular human language. So I think there's an opportunity to work with that archetype in order to really like drink down our own stories, to assimilate them and kind of wear them in our own kind of musculature and makeup as innate and as, you know, maybe not always the desirable feeling that we get from them, or obviously complex emotional terrain, but ours, you know, ours nonetheless, belonging to us. So are we ready for a little hypnosis?
A little hypnosis. So the idea, I'm going to present an idea, which is a pretty, I mean, I think it's a common idea. I don't know. And the idea is pick a past self, pick a younger self. I like to think of it as a younger self. And what you do is get into a relaxed state. So one way that I love to get into a relaxed state is just to think of something I like to do that's relaxing. So example, swimming. And then just imagine myself swimming. Imagine the way if I'm swimming outside and I can feel like the heat on the top of my back from the sun coming through the water, those top inches of water. Imagine the sounds, the feeling of like having my face totally covered with water, being immersed, the way it feels to have water in my armpits, you know, and to be in that immersed state and just sit in that imagination. Keep exploring that space. Go somewhere. If you're swimming, go to different places. Swim there. The more you imagine, the more into trance you go. While you're doing that imagination process, take a few deep breaths and just let your body relax. Imagine your body relax. Follow the thread. Follow the imagination. How does it sound? How does it feel? Are there any smells? Physical sensations. And then you can imagine yourself floating just up above yourself, and you can see yourself swimming or doing whatever it is that you find to be relaxing. And then a timeline can appear, and you can travel along the timeline to the past, and you can ask to connect to a younger version of you who needs a little support. Go back to that younger self and give them the support they need. Talk to them. Ask them the pertinent questions. You can take that younger self on a tour of your life as it is now. Ask them what medicine they most need or what perspective they most need. And then you can bring them into your heart or bring them with you. And come back. And that is something that you can do every day. You can visit different younger selves. You might find that they need different things. You might find yourself morphing to become different parts of yourself that can help give them what they need. Maybe one needs nurturance. Maybe one needs fun. Maybe one has something for you. So sometimes the past self has something that you need that you've forgotten about. Usually there's back and forth. Sometimes that past self needs you to bring in someone else who can also help, another part of yourself, or a teacher or a guide or some other entity. Sometimes that past self needs you to protect them and to do a little mental jujitsu where you bring them away from something that was traumatic and into a safe place and heal that. So you can do all of those things. And yeah.
Getting cozy with the ghosties. ghost slumber party.
I love inviting the nice ones in.
Yeah. No, that's a really powerful practice, and the non-linearity of it too, because sometimes we do need to, you know, pick a little past cutie pie of ourselves and like carry it in to wear it as an emblem or, you know, emblazon ourselves with it. And sometimes we need to, yeah, to go and attend to it in another way.
And then maybe it's like there is no past. Yeah. Time doesn't even exist.
That's another episode. And something I agree with. But yeah, there is, you know, obviously we're experiencing a certain, not linearity, because it isn't a linear experience. And I think the past can teach us that, because it rises up in unexpected moments. It's like nothing is actually ever really dead, you know, it pulsates on other levels of our experience. But yeah. Well, on that note, I think I'm going to go dive into the archives, do some dream work, cry about a few things, and also attempt to be present and eat some lunch.
Keep the party going, Bess.
Yeah. All right. Well, it was such a pleasure as always, Sandy, and we'll speak really soon.
Talk to you soon.